Sleep and biblical counseling. My apologies to William Shakespeare, but I couldn't resist the quote. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For in this sleep of death, what dreams may come. Consider the poor fellow who said that, at least in the play Hamlet. What is disturbing his sleep? Well, he's just met his father's ghost. That's kind of disturbing, I guess, in some ways. And his father has explained to him that his brother, Hamlet's uncle, poured poison in his ear, which at that time they thought you could kill people that way, but for the most part you can't because you have as long as you have an intact eardrum. But anyway, for the purpose of the story, that is how Hamlet's uncle kills Hamlet's father. And at that point then, Hamlet spends the rest of the play wandering around day and night trying to figure out how he might bring his uncle to a timely end. Talk about sleep disturbances and sleep deprivation. Well, you know, in this country, at least 10 to 30% of the people who live here struggle with sleep problems. Now, how many of you slept 8 hours last night? Raise your hands. Yeah, I couldn't hit you if I shot at you with a shotgun, could I? Okay, so now how many of you slept? 7. Well, there's a few more. 6. Lots of hands. Less than 6. Okay, all of you that are less than 8 are operating right now out of sleep deprivation. Yeah. That's the danger in being the after-lunch speaker. Because my assigned duty is to try to keep you awake during this period of time so that you might learn something. Do not feel upset if you should fall asleep. And if you think you're going to, please stand up. Go stand up in the back like Dr. Bono back there standing up. I won't be distressed by you moving around. And understand this, that if you do fall asleep, I'll take it as a compliment. If I were an anesthesiologist, it would really be good, wouldn't it? Yes. He talks his patients. No, well, anyway, you get it. So how can we in biblical counseling help in this matter? And what should we be doing as far as inquiring amongst the people that we're counseling for worry and depression and anger and other things? How should we be asking them about their nighttime sleep? Well, who do we have to blame for all this? You could blame Thomas Edison when you think about it, you know, historically. Up until that time, staying up past sundown was expensive and at times dangerous and usually involved open flames. I can remember the stories, perhaps apocryphal, about Abraham Lincoln learning to read by sitting in front of the fire in their cabin with a shovel and a piece of chalk writing on the shovel. And of course, you move forward as you move up economically, and then there's candles, still an open flame and some expense. And then there was whale oil. Whales were a little hard to catch, and you would take the oil. Yes, you would take the oil and use it to light lamps. After that came kerosene with all its stink and soot, and still you had open flames. And then there was that great invention, natural gas. Yeah, they did try lighting homes with natural gas at times with obvious occasional explosive results. So up until Edison, it was a little dangerous and kind of expensive to be up after dark. And then came the light bulb. And since then, we've sort of been operating on some sort of 24/7 kind of lifestyle. I can remember when the Walmart on East 96th Street in Indianapolis opened at 7 in the morning and closed at 11 at night. That was pretty reasonable. It was enough for most everybody to get there and get home. And then there were 8 hours when it wasn't open so people could sleep and et cetera. And it didn't open till noon on Sunday. I don't know if you know that, but the original Walmarts didn't open until noon on Sunday because Sam Walton wanted his employees to have the opportunity, if they so chose, to go to church on Sunday and not be forced out of it by their work. Now, of course, Walmarts are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I can remember when the one on East 96th Street opened like that, and I was standing with a group of my friends, and I looked around and I said, who in the world is going to go grocery shopping at 2 in the morning? And one of the ladies looked at me and said, I will. It's like, oh, all righty. Well, you know, you have a complicated life. And that wouldn't be so much of a problem if it weren't for the way that we are made. And we are made fearfully and wonderfully. That's what the psalmist says in 139:14. We are fearfully and wonderfully created. And part of that creation is sleep. And it's kind of an offhand observation, but almost all animals on earth sleep. They almost all do. Not all of them, but almost all of them do. Which would tell you that whoever the designer was had this common thing that he stuck in almost all of his creation. Points to a common designer, a common creator. We have a spot in our brains that God made. It is called, and this is your quarter word for the afternoon, suprachiasmatic nucleus. It almost reminds you of Mary Poppins and supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Anyway, suprachiasmatic nucleus, that is the central control in our body clock. From it comes information to various organs in our body, and it receives feedback from them, and it controls how our body gears up for sleep, and how it gears up for the day, and how it gears down for sleep. It is generally controlled by light, and the cycle that it has is called our circadian rhythm. That's another 25-cent word that you can have. And it is controlled by light. Interesting research about light bulbs that I just read. It compared LED lighting to incandescent lighting. And it found that people were more likely to get depressed with LED lights than they were with incandescent lights. Yeah, absolutely. I can remember when the United States government decided that we no longer had liberty to choose which kind of light bulb we might want. And so I sent my wife on a mission, and over the few years between the time they announced it and the time that many of them disappeared, we bought light bulbs every week. And now I have my wife estimates somewhere between 5 and 10 year supply of incandescent light bulbs in my basement. And my kids make merciless fun of me for it, but I just like the way life looks under a real light bulb as opposed to those squiggly sort of things that give off strange kind of light. And I'm not the only one, because I think the chairman of our board of deacons has a similar stash someplace. All right. So now on to the biblical view of sleep. I spent an hour with Bob Smith this morning. I do most every Monday. He sends his greetings. Bob Smith and Bill Good are the two human reasons why you are here today. They started this conference a long, long time ago with 40 people. That was the first conference had 40. And you all wonder why we force you to come here in February, don't you? When the weather is really accommodating. And the reason why was that was the one time that they could do it that wouldn't interfere with the other three semesters of biblical counseling teaching that we do. You know, we have a summer semester, a fall semester, and a spring semester, and this is the gap. So that's how it happened. So anyway, I borrowed some of this from Doc. The word sleep in the Bible, I think, is koimao, if I said that right. I took Greek a really long time ago, and I'm at least proficient to a kindergarten level in it. None of them got it. I don't tell jokes. They don't work for me very well. If I could tell jokes, I probably wouldn't have had to have gone to medical school in order to make a living. But anyway, in the Bible, sleep is used in various different ways. If you look in John 11, we see Jesus saying, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep," and I think that is koimao, but "I go so that I may awaken him out of sleep." Now, if you know the whole story, you know he wasn't talking about Lazarus slumbering. It is part of us, I think, as beings, that we do not like to say that people are dead. In fact, if you look at the language that we use in describing them, we'll say just about anything about them then. They are dead. They have passed away. They've gone to their reward. They are with their Lord, but we will, you know, we're just hesitant to say dead. In fact, even when you go to the funeral home and you see the dearly beloved in the casket, if they haven't been cremated, they're generally in a good suit or their best dress, and you know somebody's taken great care with their hair and done their makeup, and people will say things like, "They look like they're just asleep." Yes, that's right. So in the Bible, it's sometimes used to mean that they're dead. So it was with the young woman in Mark chapter 5, where she had died And Jesus looks at them and says, she's not dead, she's asleep. Same kind of use.